We're just trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
The Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing that you do that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Yeah, absolutely, because I can't
prove either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Welcome to O'Reilly Radio Show 71, the show where we dissect current events for your edutainment through mostly rational conversation that makes you go, O'Reilly. I am regular suspect and co-host Michael Robinson. We are joined today by regular suspect David O'Connor and, of course, our master of ceremonies, Andy Cowan.
Oh my God, I'm drunk.
Yes, we are. This is part two of our coverage of the GOP presidential debate on Fox News, and we are already several drinks in. We've just done the bottom seven, and now we're moving on to the top ten. This is going to be
might as well be the GOD because it's like their main secondary.
Try that again, David.
You can do it. I believe in you.
Ugh. They might as well be the GOD instead of the GOP because it's like they're in these debates.
Oh, man.
Just outside of, we need to kill more people in the sand.
Yeah. Running a close second to we need more warfare is Obama's bad and we need to repeal everything he's done.
Right. And, of course, kill Planned Parenthood, all of them. So, without too much further ado, shall we see what they're going to do to us next?
Oh, boy. I'm ready.
I'm going with pain.
So, for those of you following along at home, or hopefully not at work or driving, should they say something like, Reagan, 9/11, Benghazi, let's see, what else?
Hillary Clinton.
No. Because then that will simply kill you.
Every time we hear a GOP buzzword, we drink.
So if you hear Reagan,
I'm tagging out this round, man. I can't. I've already cashed half the bottle.
I told you you need to pace yourself.
Reagan, 9/11, and abortion.
One shot at a time.
Oh, and religious freedom.
Religious freedom.
Those are your four. If you hear those, drink. So
this started full at the beginning of the first hour.
Yes, I will be accompanied by Wild Turkey's American Honey, direct from the freezer.
Yes, once I finish up with my Maker's Mark and
be accompanied by beer.
Yeah. Well, you need to float off, so that's perfectly fine. All right, well, here we go.
Thanks, Bill. I'm Brett Baer, live from Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland, Ohio, alongside my co-moderators, Megyn Kelly and Chris Wallace.
Megyn Kelly, who apparently killed it on this debate.
The Republican primary debate night on Fox, the first debates of the 2016 presidential campaign.
Be the second, but who's counting?
Jinx. Tonight, the candidates you will see take the stage were selected based on their standing in an average of 5 national polls. Earlier tonight, you saw the candidates who ranked 11 through 17, and in just a few minutes, you will see the top 10.
Along with the three of us here.
Yeah, those polls were north, south, east, west, and BS.
Right now for a preview, Britt Hugh, Kirsten Powers, and Steve Hayes. Britt, starting with you, thoughts about what we're about to see tonight?
Well, the one thing I think we're going to see
is every single one of them looks like they'd rather be anywhere else.
And Jason, you in here, Chris, that the presence of this sizable audience, which from what we're hearing sounds like the house is full, I know it's not, is going to make a big difference.
Whoa! I wonder how many of those smuggled in flasks to play drinking games.
I wonder how many of those were paid to be there.
That too.
Specifically by Trump.
We have to wonder
how
problem. And then there's a question about how all of the candidates are going to fare when confronted with challenging questions about the issues and events of the day. And we'll see.
I think he's a Muppet.
I think
Bert Hume is a Muppet.
Arena in the first debate, she did very well, obviously.
A very advanced Muppet. His eyes blink.
See any one of these people.
Sam Eagle.
I can see it.
I see it.
To recover, so a bunch of stories.
Kirsten, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just incredible anticipation about this, partly because there's this wild card with Donald Trump. He's not a normal, regular politician on the stage, and so we're all sort of...
He's not a normal person. He's not a normal person at all.
And
he's a pod person.
I would have thought
Donald.
The Fox News... I would have thought that the Fox News angle going into this would be to cull the herd.
He's in the race.
But it's almost like they're like talking up
as well. So this is just a really
everybody
field. It's a very strong field.
Yeah, we go the distance.
To see, I think we want to watch
Fox Sports.
I wonder if perhaps
the reputation is
the strategy for this election to get them to the next election
make their case.
Is to have multiple GOP candidates on the ballot, and that's how they're going
to
explain
that people came to
why they lost so bad.
To The Apprentice, the person who's been sort of bombastic.
I think he's giving them too much credit.
I don't think they're that clever.
I think this is sheer ego on all of their parts.
Donald Trump that we've seen.
No, I'm not talking about the candidates themselves. I'm talking about the media moguls that are Joe.
I don't think that's that clever.
Right here.
The president and
I think the media moguls are clever.
The third story, I think, as well.
I think they know exactly what's coming.
Particularly given the performance that we saw from Carly Fiorina tonight, who's at risk of not being on the stage in the debate in California. Does somebody really bomb tonight in a room people are talking about?
Panel, thank you very much. We'll check in after the debate.
I think that their goal is to have multiple GOP candidates ballot because that's the only way to legitimately explain why they lost by 20%+.
Nice.
Right.
Who's getting the most buzz, not necessarily positive or negative, but things like the most liked interactions, shares.
Bernie Sanders is at the top of their list there. And then Rick Santorum, and then Donald Trump, and then Scott Walker, and then...
And in South Florida, remember he's been talking about...
But of course they're not going to talk about anybody who's Democrat.
Which tonight is where we are tonight, Ohio. Important for the debate, but also important for the person who wants to capture the nomination and go on to try to capture the White House. You can see it's based on conversation here. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, Jeb Bush, John Kasich, the current governor who got in and got enough momentum to end up in the top 10 debate tonight, and Bernie Sanders. The top issues here in Ohio, racial.
She actually did say his name.
Pretty much a problem we're seeing.
I'm surprised.
A big state. We'll see how these 10 do tonight. Brett?
I don't think she wanted to.
Shannon?
You know, it's a fun night because the candidates are backstage and they are waiting to come out, lined up one after the other, just like, you know, you might do at a sporting event. What is it? Is it
I'm telling you, this is Fox Sports. This is not Fox News.
It really is.
Sporting event.
We did our pregame warm-up.
I can imagine them sitting there in, like, togas, giving thumbs up and thumbs down. You know?
Yes.
James is the goal.
When Trump goes up, everybody wave your towel. Wave your towel.
Doing these debates, I have for three cycles. I have never seen.
No, they just need that big, big Trump foam thumbs up.
Yeah, all they're saying on it is Trump and war.
All right behind that curtain, and they
bring him out.
Are about to come.
I will hit ISIS very hard and very fast.
And here they come. Stand by. Come on, guys. You think they're coming back? Is it coming up with their game plan back there? You know, we have our game plan.
Yeah, maybe they're conferring with each other.
Yeah,
They're all afraid.
We're just going to shout out the names. With Ohio Governor, you may be familiar with him, John Kasich. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Mike Huckabee.
Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush.
Fuck you, Jeb Bush.
Trump.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Scott Walker.
Oh, my God.
retired neurosurgeon Dr.
I noticed they had their token woman in the bottom seven, and they've got their token black guy in the top ten, so that they can say they're not racially or sexually biased.
All of the cameramen are taking their pictures.
That's all that says.
The front page of the papers tomorrow, all the candidates standing together. We'll see who's talking to each other, who's not talking to each other.
Well, that's awkward. Read the news.
And they're saying this all directly in front of them.
You guys nervous?
Jeff is at least nodding.
We're all nervous, too.
Nah.
That'll be fine.
That sounded like the buzzer.
We saved them from that buzzer.
Everyone will see Megyn Kelly actually run for office.
Stands and the candidates now, they're going to stand behind.
I still wouldn't vote for her because she's a Republican shill, but she'd at least be interesting.
They know the rules, but we'll go over them again just one more time, and the audience will be brought up to speed, and then we'll get started with our questions.
You know, it's so interesting, and I guess they all know this. They've been talking about each other a lot during the previous 6 months or so. Now they're going to get an opportunity to talk to each other. And obviously this is all part of the process of the American people here in this hall and across the nation trying to sort out who should be the Republican nominee for president in 2016. So this is
There's only 17 to choose from, guys.
Thank you. Your podiums. That was awkward enough. Let's get you.
I was looking actually out at the Election Bureau to figure out how many candidates are actually trying to run for president. It's over 300.
They were chosen by the position from top.
But I actually did some research on this too. This is the whitest primary race ever.
Seven
to have this many candidates for the Republican Party.
Huge field.
I bet these guys are glad that Carly Fiorina did not appear in the 9 p.m. hour because boy, she unleashed a can, if you know what I'm saying, earlier.
I saw that.
You know, that's the exciting thing.
True story, Chick.
Should it be divided? Should it not be divided? Yes, there were two tiers. There were the seven lowest in the polls. Now we have the top 10 in the polls. But, you know, it's a fluid process, and it was certainly true 4 years ago. Some that were in the lower tier are going to jump up, and perhaps some that are here tonight are going to slip down a little bit. But there's a long time between the snowy caucuses in February in Iowa.
Okay. We should point out our next debate is right before the Iowa caucuses, and it's going to be quite something.
This is, I think, going to be very meaningful. It would have been tough to have 17 candidates up here, as great as it would have been to try to find a way to do it, but it's would have been like herding cats.
Photogs, I think that's it.
All right, guys.
All right.
So the audience knows we're going to restart at the top of the hour because that is when the nation believes that this debate starts, not at 8:50. So we'll get it going at 9 o'clock, and we'll have a clean start to the show, and we'll take it from there.
You're going to make them stand up there for 9 straight minutes? Why did you bring them out?
We're going to make this all come together.
I don't even know. This is ridiculous.
I have no idea.
Oh, there we go. That is the first time that any of us are seeing this.
It is 9 p.m. on the East Coast, and the moment of truth has arrived. Welcome to the first debate night.
Is it? Is this the moment of truth?
Arena in Cleveland.
I think moment of truth is a little generous. It's certainly the moment of bullshit.
But it's a moment.
It's a thing.
Tonight. Nice. Tonight, thousands of people here in the queue, along with millions of voters at home, will get their very first chance to see the candidates face off in a debate.
I would like to thank our one viewer out there actually watching the live stream. Thank you for coming back and making it feel relevant.
I promise I won't be sick this hour.
Tonight, we'll accept the Republican Party's nomination. Tonight's candidates were selected
next year sometime.
Polls. Just a few hours ago, you heard from the candidates ranked 11 through 17, and now the primetime event, the top 10.
Also of note, Fox News is partnering for tonight's debate with Facebook. For the past several weeks, we've been asking you for questions for the candidates on Facebook. Nearly 6 million of you, 6 million viewed the debate videos on and more than 40,000 of you submitted questions, some of which you will hear us asking the candidates tonight.
As for the candidates who will be answering those questions, here they are, positioned on the stage by how they stand in the polls. In the center of the stage tonight, businessman Donald Trump.
Let's let him go through the list. That way we all know.
Florida Governor.
Don't count him out. He's a media genius. He knows how to get brand recognition.
Come on, let him read off the list.
Nobody.
Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee.
Neurosurgeon Dr. Ben Carson. Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. And your very own Governor of Ohio, John Kasich.
Amazing, though I have no idea who he is. Yeah. He's in this debate.
It is
they're in Ohio.
It is a cavalcade of worthy people.
12 out of home field advantage.
It might be. We'll see. Listen, the rules,
some objections coming.
It might be. The rules for tonight are simple. 1 minute for answers, 30 seconds for follow-ups, and if a candidate runs over, you'll hear this. Pleasant, no? We also have a big crowd here with us tonight in the home of the Cavaliers, as I mentioned. And while we expect them to be enthusiastic, as you heard, we don't want to take anything away from the valuable time for the candidates. So we're looking for somewhere between a reaction to a LeBron James dunk and...
As he rattles on there, they are using only about half of the arena, so the other half is completely dark.
Yeah.
So however many seats that is.
How much you love hand-raising questions. So we promise this is the only one tonight. The only one. Is there anyone on stage, and can I see hands, who is unwilling tonight to pledge your support to the eventual nominee of the Republican Party and pledge to not run an independent campaign against that person? Again, we're looking for you to raise your hand now. Raise your hand now if you won't make that pledge tonight.
Okay.
Mr. Trump. So, Mr. Trump, to be clear, you're standing on a Republican primary.
I fully understand.
The place where the RNC will give the nominee the nod.
I fully understand.
And that experts say an independent run would almost certainly hand the race over to Democrats and likely another Clinton. You can't say tonight that you can make that pledge.
I cannot say. I have to respect the person that if it's not me, the person that wins. If I do win and I'm leading by quite a bit, that's what I want to do. I can totally make that pledge. If I'm the nominee, I will pledge I will not run as an independent. And I am discussing it with everybody, but I'm, you know, talking about a lot of leverage. We want to win, and we will win. But I want to win as the Republican. I want to run as the Republican nominee.
So tonight you can't say if another one of these...
This is what's wrong. I mean,
okay.
This is what's wrong. He buys and sells politicians of all stripes. He's already, he's already hedging his bet on the Clintons, okay? So
the questions haven't even begun, and they're already tearing into each other. This is beautiful.
He's already hedging his bet to buying politicians.
Well, I've given him plenty of money. We're going to move on.
I will not make the pledge at this time.
Okay.
Gentlemen, our first round.
Got a grenade on stage.
The general election. And we start tonight with you, Dr. Carson. You are a successful neurosurgeon, but you admit that you have had to study up when it comes to foreign policy, saying there's a lot to learn. Your critics say that your inexperience shows. You suggested that the Baltic states are not a part of NATO, and just months ago you were unfamiliar with the major political parties and government in Israel. And domestically, you thought Alan Greenspan had been Treasury Secretary instead of Federal Reserve Chair. Aren't these basic mistakes, and don't they raise legitimate questions about whether you are ready to be president?
Well, I could take issue with all of those things, but we don't have time. But I will say we have a debate here tonight, and we will have an opportunity to explore those areas. And I'm looking very much forward to demonstrating that, in fact, the thing that is probably most important is having a brain and to be able to figure things out and learn things very rapidly. So,
67 honorary doctorate degrees.
Experience comes from a large number of different arenas. And America became a great nation early on, not because it was flooded with politicians, but because it was flooded with people who understood the value of personal responsibility, hard work, creativity, innovation, and that's what will get us on the right track now as well.
You mean immigrants?
Yes.
Rubio, when Jeb Bush announced his candidacy for presidency, he said this: there's no passing off responsibility when you're a governor, no blending into the legislative crowd. Could you please address Governor Bush across the stage here and explain to him why you, someone who has never held executive office, are better prepared to be president than he is, a man who you say did a great job running your state of Florida for 8 years?
Well, thank you for the question, Chris, and it's great to be here tonight. Let me begin by saying this. I'm not new to the political process. I was making a contribution as the speaker of the third largest and most diverse state in the country well before I even got into the Senate. I would add to that that this election cannot be a resume competition. It's important to be qualified, but if this election is a resume competition, then Hillary Clinton's going to be the next president because she's been in office and in government longer than anybody else running here tonight. Here's what this election better be about. This election better be about the future, not the past. Be about the issues.
So experience doesn't matter at all.
No, he did hand that to her, though.
Facing an economy that has been radically transformed. You know, the largest retailer in the country, in the world today, Amazon, doesn't even own a single store. And these changes have been disruptive. They have changed people's lives. The jobs that once sustained our middle class, they either don't pay enough or they are gone. And we need someone that understands that as our nominee. If I'm our nominee, how is Hillary Clinton going to lecture me about living paycheck to paycheck? I was raised paycheck to paycheck. How is she going to lecture me? How is she going to lecture me about student loans? I owed over $100,000 just 4 years ago. If I'm our nominee, we will be the party of the future.
Yeah. All paid off now. Thanks, military industrial complex.
Yeah, it's all paid off now from taxpayer dollars. Fuck you.
You have a life experience uniquely your own, not your father's, not your brother's. But there are several opponents on this stage who get big applause lines in early voting states with this line. Quote, the last thing the country needs is another Bush in the Oval Office. So do you understand the real concern in this country about dynastic politics?
Absolutely, I do. And I'm going to run hard, run with heart, and run to win. I'm going to have to earn this. Maybe the bar is even higher for me. That's fine. I've got a record in Florida. I'm proud of my dad, and I'm certainly proud of my brother. In Florida, they call me Jeb because I earned it.
In Florida, we call you asshole because nobody likes you.
We balanced everything.
I call you Jeb because that's what you ran as.
Dollars of reserves to $9 billion of reserves. We were one of two states that went to AAA bond rating. They call me Vito Corleone because I vetoed 2,500 separate lines.
Who calls you that?
I'm my own man.
He talks about how much he raised the budget, and yet we are still...
During my 8 years.
And what's that?
Created.
That's 100,000 million.
Because I applied
$197 billion in debt.
State the right
way. A lot of that's our current governor, too.
But still, he talks about how much he did for raising money when we're still in the shitter.
One of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that's not what that provides, in particular, when it comes to women. You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals. Your Twitter account...
Only Rosie O'Donnell.
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Fuck you.
Wow.
Twitter account...
Yeah. You went there.
For the record... It was well beyond Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Your Twitter account has several disparaging comments about women's looks. You once told a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice it would be a pretty picture to see her on her knees. Does that sound to you like the temperament of a man we should elect as president? And how will you answer the charge from Hillary Clinton, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee, that you are part of the war on women?
Shots fired.
This country has is being politically correct. I've been challenged by so many people, and I don't frankly have time for total political correctness. And to be honest with you, this country doesn't have time either. This country is in big trouble. We don't win anymore. We lose to China. We lose to Mexico, both in trade and at the border. We lose to everybody. And frankly, what I say, and oftentimes it's fun, it's kidding, we have a good time. What I say is what I say. And honestly, Megan, if you don't like it, I'm sorry. I've been very nice to you, although I could probably maybe not be based on the way you have treated me, but I wouldn't do that. But you know what?
Douchebag.
We need strength. We need quickness, and we need brain in this country to turn it around.
Brain. Not brains, brain.
Senator Cruz, your colleague, Senator Paul, right there next to you, said a few months ago he agrees with you on a number of issues, but he says you do nothing to grow the party. He says you feed red meat to the base, but you don't reach out to minorities. You have a toxic relationship with GOP leaders in Congress. You even called the Republican Senate leader, Mitch McConnell, a liar recently. How can you win in 2016 when you're such a divisive figure?
Chris, I believe the American people are looking for someone to speak the truth.
You may have some paid seats.
To go to Washington, to go along, to get along, to get to agree with the career politicians in both parties who get in bed with the lobbyists and special interests. Then I ain't your guy. There is a reason that we have $18 trillion in debt. Because as conservatives, as Republicans, we keep winning elections. We got a Republican House, we got a Republican Senate, and we don't have leaders who honor their commitments. I will always tell the truth and do what I said I would.
Otherwise, but okay.
Yeah, all of your commitments are to the big businesses who pay for your ticket.
Darling of conservatives, you tout your record as a Republican governor in a blue state. On Facebook, the most people talking about you, not surprisingly, come from your state of New Jersey, and one of the top issues they are talking about is the economy. This may be why. Under your watch, New Jersey has undergone 9 credit rating downgrades. That's fourth in private sector growth. You face an employee pension crisis, and the Garden State has the third highest foreclosure rate in the country. So why should voters believe that your management of the country's finances would be any different?
If you think it's bad now, you should have seen it when I got there. The fact is, in the 8 years before I became governor, taxes and fees were raised at the state level 115 times. In the 8 years before I became governor, spending was increased 56%. And in the 8 years before I became governor, there was zero net private sector job growth in New Jersey. Zero for 8 years. So what did we do? We came in, we balanced an $11 billion deficit on a $29 billion budget by cutting over 800 programs in the state budget. We brought the budget into balance with no tax increases.
Pause it.
We vetoed 5 income taxes.
Pause it, Andy.
My time is governor.
Paused.
His statement, we brought the budget into balance with no tax incentives. Total lie.
Ooh. What do you got?
Now, as New Jersey's governor, Christie did cut the earned income tax credit, which largely benefits low-income workers. Brought it down from 25% to 20%. He just recently proposed to bring it up to 30%. He also delayed the homestead credit program, granting property tax relief, and then capped property taxes. He extended the sales tax on online purchases to out-of-state retailers, tried to get e-cigarettes taxed at a higher level. So while he has vetoed a number of proposed tax increases, there are others that are totally his idea. And to counter it, you know, to make up for that, he's hiking all sorts of fees all over the place. So he's full of shit.
Well, it's a shell game. I mean, that's what politics ends up being, especially with budgets.
But it's a total lie. He has raised taxes where he felt like it.
Right. Yeah, they're just called fees instead of taxes. Just like in the Florida roads, they're called tolls instead of tax funding for the roads.
So straight up liar.
Well, they have toll roads up in Jersey too, the Jersey Turnpike and all that. But with the Florida toll roads, those are all an independent organization as well, the expressway authorities and things like that. So they always manage to skirt in some different way. Of course, strangely enough, those are the best maintained roads actually around the area. So maybe something's working for them. Okay. So he's definitely twisting and bending the truth, just like any good politician would, to suit his narrative of I've never raised taxes, and, you know, in big parentheses, it would be, well, that would be the income taxes.
Yeah, and I'm calling him out on being a fucking liar.
Yeah. So, okay, ready? 3, 2, 1.
We cut business taxes $2.3 billion, and we cut regulation by one-third of what my predecessor put in place. And what's happened since? 192,000 new private sector jobs in the 5.5 years I've been governor. We have a lot of work to do in New Jersey, but I am darn proud of how we've brought our state back.
You've consistently said that you want to make abortion illegal, even in cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. You recently signed an abortion law in Wisconsin that does have an exception for the mother's life, but you are on record as having objected to it. Would you really let a mother die rather than have an abortion? And with 83% of the American public in favor of a life exception, are you two out of the mainstream on this issue to win the general election?
Shots fired.
I'm pro-life. I've always been pro-life. And I've got a position
you're pro-birth.
With many Americans out there in that
I'm like Scott Walker.
Unborn child that's in need of protection out there. And I've said many a time that unborn child can be protected, and there are many other alternatives that will also protect the life of that mother. That's been consistently proven. Unlike Hillary.
It has not been consistently proven.
Position in terms of support.
That's why life exceptions exist.
Planned Parenthood more than 4 years ago, long before any of these videos came out. I've got a position that's in line with everyday America.
Governor Huckabee, like Governor Walker, you have staked out strong positions on social issues. You favor a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriages. You
said abortion. So I got
banning abortions except for the life of the mother. Millions of people in this country agree with you, but according to the polls, and again, this is an electability question, according to the polls, more people don't. So how do you persuade enough independents and Democrats to get elected in 2016?
Chris, I disagree with the idea that the real issue is a constitutional amendment. That's a long and difficult process. I've actually taken a position that's bolder than that. A lot of people are talking about ending Planned Parenthood as if that's a huge game changer. I think it's time to do something even more bold. I think the next president ought to invoke the 5th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution. Now that we clearly know that baby inside the mother's womb is a person at the moment of conception.
No, we don't!
Because of the DNA schedule that we now have clear scientific evidence on.
You may now facepalm.
No. No.
If I do,
wrong.
There's going to be brains in the back wall.
No, until 21 weeks plus during pregnancy, if you remove the fetus from the mother, it will not survive. Zero chance of viability. Until it can survive on its own, it's not a person, it's a parasite. You're a fucking moron.
Now let's try to keep it at least NC-17. We've gone past PG-13, you know, because, well, expletive deleted all over the place on this one, because, well, we're drinking, and it's politics, and they're saying stupid things. So, yes, I apologize to the now two viewers out there on YouTube.
Who are you?
Thank you. Join us in chat. Yes, thank you for joining us. And if you're coming over, you can please go out to oreillyradio.com and join in on the IRC chat. David and I are in there, and we are waiting for your call. Operators are standing by. And with that, let's see what else the huckster here, Huckabee, has to say about. He was talking about abortion again. Damn it!
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, this is going to hurt.
This notion that we just continue to ignore the personhood of the individual is a violation of that unborn child's 5th and 14th Amendment rights for due process and equal protection under the law. It's time that we recognize the Supreme Court is not the supreme being, and we change the policy to be pro-life and protect children instead of rip up their body parts and sell them like their parts to a Buick.
Of course, they're not doing that, but okay.
Dr. Paul, you recently blamed the rise of ISIS on Republican hawks. Now, you later said that statement, you could have said it better. But the statement went on, and you said, quote, everything they've talked about in foreign policy, they've been wrong for the last 20 years. Why are you so quick to blame your own party?
First of all, only ISIS is responsible for the terrorism. Only ISIS is responsible for the depravity. But we do have to examine, how are we going to defeat ISIS? I've got a proposal. I'm the leading voice in America for not arming the allies of ISIS. I've been fighting amidst a lot of opposition from both Hillary Clinton as well as some Republicans who wanted to send arms to the allies of ISIS. ISIS rides around in $1 billion worth of U.S. Humvees. It's a disgrace. We ought to stop it. We shouldn't fund our enemies, for goodness sakes. So we didn't create ISIS. ISIS created themselves, but we will stop them. And one of the ways we stop them is by not funding them and by not arming them.
That is a logical argument, at least.
That is the first sensible thing any of them has said.
Tonight, and it is all.
It's close, but it's still a lie of omission.
Yeah.
There's an additional $1.4 billion in just the first 18 months. You defended your Medicaid expansion by invoking God, saying to skeptics that when they arrive in heaven, St. Peter isn't going to ask them how small they've kept government, but what they have done for the poor. Why should Republican voters, who generally want to shrink government, believe that you won't use your St. Peter rationale to expand every government program?
Well, first of all, Omega, you should know that that President Reagan expanded Medicaid 3 or 4 times. Secondly,
Reagan drank.
Reagan.
Back to Ohio to do what? To treat the mentally ill. 10,000 of them sit in our prisons. It costs $22,500 a year to keep them in prison. I'd rather get them their medication so they could lead a decent life. Secondly, we are rehabbing the drug addicted. 80% of the people in our prisons have addiction problems. We now treat them in the prisons, release them in the community, and the recidivism rate is 10%, and everybody across this country knows that the tsunami of drugs is threatening their very families. So we're treating
the tsunami of drugs?
Finally, the working poor, instead of them having come into the emergency rooms, where it costs more, where they're sicker, and we end up paying. We brought a program in here to make sure that people could get on their feet. And you know what? Everybody has a right to their God-given purpose. And finally, our Medicaid is growing at one of the lowest rates in the country. And finally, we went from $8 billion in the hole to $2 billion in the black. We've cut $5 billion in taxes, and we've grown 350,000 jobs.
So, how about those government programs, huh? How about those social programs?
Gentlemen,
not so bad, huh?
A new subject that all of you have been.
Yeah, turns out when you use them, your economy grows. How about that?
Governor Bush, you released a new plan this week on illegal immigration, focusing on enforcement, which some suggest is your effort to show that you're not soft on that issue. I want to ask you about a statement that you made last year about illegal immigrants, and here's what you said. They broke the law, but it's not a felony. It's an act of love. It's an act of commitment to your family. Do you stand by that statement, and do you stand by your support for earned legal status?
I do. I believe that the great majority of people coming here illegally have no other option. They want to provide for their family. But we need to control our border. It's our responsibility to pick and choose who comes in. So I've written a book.
Okay. Two things. One, hey, Nico! Welcome to the show. Welcome to the chat room. Thank you very much for joining us on this this rather special and long drunken fiesta that we have here. Secondly, with this whole immigration thing, I really wish that they actually would have some history lessons on how this nation was formed by immigrants.
Because it was.
Yeah.
The entire nation is a nation of immigrants.
Marco Rubio, his parents from Cuba.
Feathers.
Yeah. So, okay.
There are zero feathers on that stage.
Exactly. Okay, and some of them are very shortly removed from being immigrants themselves. Yeah, Marco Rubio's parents, Cuban. Straight from Cuba. So,
Ted Cruz was born in Canada.
Yes. So,
yep. Certified.
Yeah, had dual citizenship, renounced his Canadian citizenship. Of course, they made a big fuss about that. I still don't actually think he's legally electable, but, you know, hey, whatever. Okay, moving on.
About this, and yet this week I did come up with a comprehensive strategy that really mirrored what we said in the book, which is that we need to deal with e-verify, we need to deal with people that come with a legal visa and overstay, we need to be much more strategic on how we deal with border enforcement, border security, we need to eliminate the sanctuary cities in this country. It is ridiculous and tragic that people are dying because of the fact that local governments are not following the federal law. There's much to do. I think rather than talking about this as a wedge issue, which Barack Obama's done now for 6 long years, the next president, and I hope to be that president, will fix this once and for all so that we can turn this into a driver for high sustained economic growth. And there should be a path to earn legal status for those that are here. Not amnesty. Earn legal status, which means you pay a fine and do many things over an extended period of time.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Trump, it has not escaped anybody's notice that you say that the Mexican government is sending criminals, rapists, across the border.
Oh, I've got some for this.
Called those remarks, quote, extraordinarily ugly. I'd like you're right next to him, talk to him directly and say how you respond to that, and you have repeatedly said that you have evidence that the Mexican government is doing this, but that you have evidence you have refused or declined to share. Why not use this first Republican presidential debate to share your proof with the American people?
Put up or shut up.
You wouldn't even be talking about illegal immigration, Chris. You wouldn't even be talking about it. This was not a subject that was on anybody's mind until I brought it up at my announcement, and I said, Mexico is sending. Except the reporters, because they're a very dishonest lot, generally speaking, in the world of politics, they didn't cover my statement the way I said it. The fact is, since then, many killings, murders, crime, drugs pouring across the border, our money going out and the drugs coming in. And I said, we need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly. I don't mind having a big, beautiful door in that wall so that people can come into this country legally. But we need, Jeb, to build a wall. We need to keep illegals out.
Mr. Trump.
Pause it here.
Okay.
If it weren't for him, we wouldn't be talking about illegal immigration. Republicans have been talking about illegal immigration for at least.
Well, what about Rick?
At least my entire lifetime, it was a platform of George W. It was a platform. It was a platform during both of the campaign runs for the ones who lost to Obama. It's been going on for like 30 years.
Yeah,
it's been a talking point. Let's see. In 2013, the Republicans tried to overhaul it in the Senate, and it didn't pass in the House. And then Obama did his amnesty thing, and the Republicans blew up about it. Then let's talk about this statement about the Mexican government intentionally setting over criminals. As I said in episode 70, and I'm going to say it again here, because I'm a douchebag, since 2000, illegal immigration was like 1.5 million from Mexico.
Yeah.
It is currently a little over 200,000 from Mexico. Illegal immigration from Mexico is lower than from any other source. Any other source.
I honestly think it's because they don't want to come here anymore.
I don't think it's
more difficult. I just think they don't want to come.
No, it's actually because Mexico is doing better economically. The big countries that you see illegal immigrants coming from are places like Guatemala.
Central America.
Latin America. You know, Guatemala, Honduras, I think El Salvador's in there. Places that are just doing terrible. They're either, their economy's in the shitter, or there's, some kind of internal revolution going on, and there's violence everywhere. You know, that's where these people are coming from. They're refugees.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the child refugee problem. I mean, that was in the news for a long time, and I guess it's still happening. It's unaccompanied minors,
Yeah, but they don't talk about that. They don't talk about the kids that are coming over here to escape a war zone. Because that would be sympathetic, and that would be contrary to their message.
Yeah, because you don't kick the puppy. And a little child who has been stripped away from their parents in an effort to give them any sort of chance, anything, that is not the kind of thing that you want to stake your claim in.
Yeah, because the alternative is...
That's not the line in the sand you want to draw.
Yeah, the alternative is sending these kids home to be child soldiers.
Right, just turn them around with nothing but the rag on their back.
Yeah.
No food in their belly. Yeah, it's
That's what the whole amnesty thing was about. That's what the real issue is here. These people are refugees from war zones.
Yeah, but obviously that's too nuanced. We can't actually discuss that.
We can't accurately represent the events of the times.
No. Well, there's obviously not enough time. And I have a room somewhere in New Jersey. Yeah. shall we hear more from the Donald?
Yes.
You have 30 seconds to answer my question, which was, what evidence do you have, specific evidence, that the Mexican government is sending criminals across the border? 30 seconds.
Border Patrol, I was at the border last week. Border Patrol people that I deal with, that I talk to, they say this is what's happening because our leaders are stupid. Our politicians are stupid. And the Mexican government is much smarter, much sharper, much more cunning. And they send the bad ones over because they don't want to pay for them. They don't want to take care of them. Why should they when the stupid leaders of the United States will do it for them? And that's what's happening, whether you like it or not.
That's not evidence.
Total lie.
That's hearsay.
Yeah.
It's hearsay. It will never stand up in a court of law.
That's not evidence.
Well, it'll stand up in the court of opinion. That's all he cares about.
Yeah. He's a media genius. He knows how to brand.
News Facebook Republican debate night, and we're going to continue the questions now on illegal immigration. We kind of ended with a cliffhanger there, so let's continue the conversation. Governor Kasich, I know you don't like to talk about Donald Trump, but I do want to ask you about the merit of what he just said. When you say that the American government is stupid, that the Mexican government is sending criminals, that we're being bamboozled, is that an adequate response?
to the question of illegal immigration.
Chris, first of all, I was just saying to Chris Christie, they say we're outspoken. We need to take lessons from Donald Trump if we're really going to learn it. Hey, here's the thing about Donald Trump.
Donald Trump's hitting a nerve in this country. He is. He's hitting a nerve. People are frustrated. They're fed up. They don't think the government is working for them. And for people that want to just
stroke his ego,
making a mistake. Now, he's got his solutions. Some of us have other solutions. You know, look, I balanced the federal budget as one of the chief architects when I was in Washington. Hadn't been done since. I was a military reformer. I took the state of Ohio from an $8 billion hole and a 350,000 job loss to a $2 billion surplus and a gain of 350,000 jobs.
Respectfully, can we talk about illegal immigration?
But the point is that we all have solutions. Mr. Trump is touching a nerve because people want the wall to be built. They want to see an end to illegal immigration. They want to see it, and we all do, but we all have different ways of getting there. You're going to hear from all of us tonight about what our ideas are.
All right. Well,
still haven't answered the question.
Nope.
With you.
I don't know the speaking style, though.
As simple as our leaders are stupid, their leaders are smart, and all of these illegals coming over are criminals?
Well, let me set the record straight on a couple of things. The first is the evidence is now clear that the majority of people coming across the border are not from Mexico. They're coming from Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras. Hey. Those countries are the source of the people that are now coming in its majority. I also believe we need a fence.
What fence?
Tunnel under the fence.
Holy crap. Someone who actually... Did some research.
Need an entry exit tracking system and all sorts of other things to prevent illegal immigration. But I agree with what Governor Kasich just said. People are frustrated. This is the most generous country in the world when it comes to immigration. There are 1 million people a year who legally immigrate to the United States, and people feel like we're being taken advantage of. We feel like despite our generosity, we are being taken advantage of. And let me tell you who never gets talked about in these debates. The people that call my office, who have been waiting for 15 years to come to the United States, and they paid their fees, and they hired a lawyer, and they can't get in, and they're wondering maybe they should come illegally. And so these are important issues, and we should address it. It's a serious problem that needs to be addressed. And otherwise, we're going to keep talking about this for the next 30 years like we have for the last 30 years.
Governor Walker...
He makes a salient point.
Till as recently as 2013, just 2 years ago, you supported comprehensive immigration reform, including a path to citizenship. Now you say that was a quick reaction to something you hadn't really thought about, and you've changed your mind. Other than politics, could you explain why in the last 2 years you've changed your position on a path to citizenship, and are there other past positions that we shouldn't hold you to?
Yeah, well, Chris, I actually said...
Talk, brothers.
I acknowledge that. I said I actually listened to the American people, and I think people across America want a leader who's actually going to listen to them. Right. I talked to the state governor and other elected officials. I looked at how this president, particularly through last November, messed up the immigration system in this country. Most importantly, I listened to the people of America. I believe we need to secure the border. I've been to the border with Governor Abbott.
This is just a pleasant reminder to those listening at home and following along. Scott Walker is the chosen flag bearer, the standard bearer for the Koch brothers. So he is their selected candidate. Of course, as soon as he loses the primary, then they'll probably shift the remainder of their funds to make sure that anybody that could be remotely supportive of their needs gets whatever they need. But right now, they've chosen to back Scott Walker for some strange reason. So let's see what other pandering he has to say.
But in Texas and others, seeing the problems that they have there, there's international criminal organizations penetrating our southern-based borders, and we need to do something about it. Secure the border, enforce the law, no amnesty, and go forward with a legal immigration system that gives priority to American working families and wages.
Senator Cruz, some 1,400 people submitted questions on this very hot topic of illegal immigration on Facebook, and a number of them were about the murder of Kate Steinle in San Francisco, allegedly shot down by an illegal. Doug Betancourt sent this question. Will you support Kate Steinle's law, which would impose a mandatory 5-year prison term for an illegal who's deported and then returns to this country? And will you defund sanctuary cities for violating federal law?
Chris, absolutely yes. And not only will I support it,
I have authored Kate's Law in the United States Senate and filed that legislation. I tried to get the Senate to vote to pass Kate's Law on the floor of the Senate just 1 week ago, and the leader of our own party blocked a vote on Kate's Law. You know,
private prison law.
Age of our leaders being stupid. It's not a question of stupidity. It's that they don't want to enforce the immigration laws. That there are far too many in the Washington cartel that support amnesty. President Obama's talked about fundamentally transforming this country. There's 7 billion people across the face of the globe, many of whom want to come to this country. If they come legally, great, but if they come illegally and they get amnesty, that is how we fundamentally change this country.
Then why don't we make it easier for them to come here legally?
Right?
If that's okay, then make it an easier path to citizenship.
No, you know what? You know, I just looked this up to confirm it because I knew this was true, but I wanted to make sure that I knew. The first amnesty law that was ever passed for illegal immigration was the Immigration Reform Act. The Immigration Reform Control Act of 1986. Guess who was in office in 1986? Reagan!
Oh, yeah, that's the guy. I don't have to drink if you say it, right?
No.
Okay, good.
Reagan passed amnesty. You douches.
Oh.
It's just not convenient for you to support it now because a black guy's in office.
Right. Well, at some point, we have such a backlog of people. And, you know, those folks, you either keep them trying to go through the system or you make a good path to citizenship, you sign the amnesty, you clear the backlog so that you can make some actual real progress, get people on their feet, get people working the way that the system is intended. You know, kind of doing an Ellis Island kind of thing. Get them in.
Yeah.
Do the thing. But no, we're not allowed to apparently be the home of the free, you know, bring me your huddled masses kind of thing anymore. So much for that.
Yeah, so much for that.
It really is striking. A majority of the candidates on this stage have supported amnesty. I have never supported amnesty, and I led the fight against Chuck Schumer's Gang of Eight amnesty legislation in the Senate.
Good. Go back to Canada.
All right, gentlemen, we're going to switch topics now and talk a bit about terror and national security.
Bum, bum, bum.
You have said that Senator Paul's opposition to the NSA's collection of phone records has made the United States weaker and more vulnerable, even going so far as to say that he should be called before Congress to answer for it if we should be hit by another terrorist attack. Do you really believe you can assign blame to Senator Paul just for opposing the bulk collection of people's phone records in the event of a terrorist attack?
Yes, I do. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm the only person on this stage who's actually filed applications under the Patriot Act, who have gone before the federal, the Foreign Intelligence Service Court, who has prosecuted and investigated and jailed terrorists in this country after September 11th. I was appointed U.S.
Now I got a drink.
On September 10th, 2001, and the world changed enormously the next day. And it happened in my state. This is not theoretical to me. I went to the funerals. We lost friends of ours in the Trade Center that day. My own wife was two blocks from the Trade Center that day at her office, having gone through it that morning. When you actually have to be responsible for doing this, you can do it, and we did it for 7 years in my office, respecting civil liberties and protecting the homeland. And I will make no apologies ever for protecting the lives and the safety of the American people. We have to give more tools to our folks to be able to do that, not fewer, and then trust those people and oversee them to do it the right way. As president, that is exactly what I'll do.
Am I the only one that whenever they say homeland, I'm immediately reminded?
Yeah, motherland.
Yeah, good. I'm not the only one.
Yeah, every time. Every time I see that fucking cartoon.
It's like, oh.
I also think every time they talk about, you know, giving the government more power to look at our private information, I keep thinking of 1984.
Yeah.
And then of course we have to trust them to do the right thing. Well, they're the ones who do all the oversight. How can we trust them?
Yeah, I don't trust politicians, especially when they put everything behind a national security letter gag order so that they can't say what's been done. You know,
and you can't ask.
You can feel all of it.
Yeah.
But that's, if you've watched this show for any length of time, you know how
angry and upset I can get over the whole net neutrality issue and NSA surveillance and
just transparency in government.
All that. Yeah, it's a thing, especially for this show and your hosts. Okay, back to what he just said.
May I respond?
Go ahead, sir.
I want to collect more records from terrorists, but less records from innocent Americans. The Fourth Amendment was what we fought the revolution over. John Adams said it was the spark that led to our war for independence. And I'm proud of standing for the Bill of Rights, and I will continue to stand for the Bill of Rights.
And Megan, that's a completely ridiculous answer. Collect more records from terrorists, but less records from other people. How are you supposed to know, Megan?
Use the Fourth Amendment.
How are you supposed
to? Use the Fourth Amendment.
I'll tell you how you
get a warrant.
Let me tell you something.
Get a judge to sign
when you. Senator.
Wait, Governor Christie, make your point.
Listen, Senator. You know, when you're sitting in a subcommittee, just blowing hot air about this, you can say things like that. When you're responsible for protecting the lives of the American people, then what you need to do is to make sure that you use the system the way it's supposed to work.
Governor, you fundamentally misunderstand the Bill of Rights. Every time you did a case, you got a warrant from a judge. I'm talking about searches without warrants, indiscriminately of all Americans' records, and that's what I fought to end. I don't trust President Obama with our records. I know you gave him a big hug, and if you want to give him a big hug again, go right ahead.
Wow.
Look at what you've done.
You know, Senator Paul.
Oh no, he didn't.
Are the
he didn't.
Lost their people.
They might as well just bring out the Jell-O pit already.
And those had nothing to do. And those had nothing to do with politics. Unlike what you're doing by cutting speeches on the floor of the Senate, then putting them on the internet within a half an hour to raise money for your campaign,
right,
and while still putting our country at risk.
All right, we're cutting it off there.
Because our country is at risk when you share the truth.
Yeah. Well, I want to move on because I have. We're going to get to you, Governor, but I really want to get to a Facebook questioner. His name is Alex Shalgren, and he had the following.
This guy from Facebook is way more important than you, Governor.
How would the candidate stop the treacherous actions of ISIL, and its growing influence in the U.S. if they were to become president?
What influence?
The Facebook users and the folks on Facebook wanted the candidate to speak to ISIS tonight. You asked the chairman of the Joint Chiefs a question. What would it take to destroy ISIS in 90 days?
There is absolutely zero proof that they are here in this country at all.
Hide, and then you accused him of pushing Medicaid for the Iraqis. How would you destroy ISIS in 90 days?
Megan, we need a commander in chief that speaks the truth. We will not defeat radical Islamic terrorism so long as we have a president unwilling to utter the words radical Islamic terrorism. When I asked General Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint...
I think every time they say radical Islam, I have to drink, because that just makes my eyes, you know, roll back in my head like a slot machine.
I can feel a vein twitching in my forehead.
No, yeah, it's look.
I felt my blood pressure drop.
Okay, on this panel, you have an anti-theist. I hate all religion equally. I don't like any of them. You have a theist. And a deist. And we all are understanding that Islam is simply a religion.
Here's those
that take it way to the extreme, but there's also Christians that take it way to the extreme.
But here's the thing.
Westboro Baptist Church, and then you've got ISIL.
Here's the thing. Any way you look at it, ISIS or ISIL or whatever you want to call them, they're not Islamic. They have broken basic tenets of Islam by committing acts of violence against Islamic structures on holy days. They have launched attacks on Ramadan. They are not Islamic.
Well, no,
tenets of their own religion, they are going to hell.
Well, it depends. Again, it depends, because all religions are subject to interpretation, some more than others, of course. But with them, since they believe that they are in jihad, they're in jihad mode. You know, it's like super extreme mode or whatever, you know. So,
yes, yes, but jihad mode does not make it acceptable to attack a mosque.
If they have somehow gotten in their heads that mosque is, you know, representative of those that are infidels now, you know, because they can go after their own people if they are not in the same flock, basically, if they're not in the same group. Because all the things in the Bible about, you know, do unto others as you would have done unto yourself, of course, the golden rule, which is not the Bible, but, you know, it's there.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt not kill was only for those in your tribe.
Yeah, it's those only for the side
of your unit.
Yeah, that's only for those who are in the flock. But the problem still exists that on holy days you're not allowed to do anything but pray. And they are going out and doing very public acts of violence on holy days. That is a crime worthy of being stoned to death.
Well, wait. Now, also in certain Islamic cultures, they do some of their prayers are also performed with flailing their own backs with sharp knives.
But the point is
or their foreheads.
The point is that you cannot engage in these acts on the holy day.
If that is a method that they have somehow gotten into their heads, which is something that presents it as a holy rite, then all bets are off.
Nope. It's bullshit. I don't care about what bullshit they're pulling out of their ass. The book says
to you, but if they find no, if they
the
have
book says very explicitly. No, the book says, their holy text says very explicitly, on the holy days you do nothing but pray. Nothing.
There are various interpretations of the Bible, which have led to entire schisms.
Yes, but the Quran has been systematically suppressed until there is only one version that is held holy.
This is true,
if there is one version that is held holy and that says unequivocally you can do nothing on holy days but pray, and then you try to interpret it, you're full of shit.
But they also have Sharia law, and under that they have other interpretive laws, which they have deemed also to be holy and standing as equal.
To continue to draw the parallel with where I was going, was essentially people pick and choose the Holy Bible. The New International
Version. Whenever they do that, I call them unholy. It's the same phenomenon. You cannot pick and choose. If you pick and choose, you're a blasphemer.
Inherently, there are entire massive churches based upon interpretations of the Bible that you may not agree with. So you're talking about millions of people who are blasphemers.
Yes, I am. Absolutely. Yeah. Because
but the thing is, you are not Islamic.
If you hold one part of the book to be – if you say the book is absolute sacred – is absolute infallible sacred word, and then you go and pick and choose – then you are a blasphemer, because you cannot have both. If you say that the book is not absolute sacred word and it can be interpreted, and then you go pick and choose, well, then you're not a blasphemer, you're just an idiot sometimes. This is not a case of them just being an idiot. This is a case of...
In the original Arabic?
I don't read Arabic. But the point is not that I don't do it. The point is that I would never say that it's a perfect holy text, because it's been touched by man and is therefore touched by man's flaws.
Sure.
But if you say, as Islam does, that the Quran is a perfect holy text sent by God, and then you go and pick and choose, you're blaspheming.
Well, what they're not picking and choosing. The thing is about Islam is it is contextually in a timeline. As I've learned, the things that were earlier in the book, basically it's hierarchical. The things that come after, if they contradict something that came previously in the work somewhere, then it's the thing that came later supersedes it. there's actually a terminology for this practice.
It's a hierarchy.
Well, it's a superseding of it. There's a specific term for it. But what it is, what they have consistently done is that is the way that they interpret it and know to interpret it. However, when they want Islam to be the religion of peace and milk and honey and all that, that is in the early days of the religion. Those are the earlier verses where it was a weak religion and it was looking for acceptance and it was trying to be a passive thing. As the religion, as if you look through the Quran, it gets more and more violent as it goes on because it becomes more and more warlike as they gain power.
Yes, so you have to pick
one later that supersede the milk and honey of the previous chapters.
Yeah, so you have to pick one. You don't get to pick one interpretation when it suits you, and then the other when it suits you.
When dealing with infidels, they do that. They pick and choose all day long.
And
when it comes to what they're doing, the way they're actually supposed to practice, it's supposed to be with a superseding thing. So actually, Islam is all about taking over the entire world by force.
And any way you interpret it, though, it's full of shit because they keep changing their story.
Well, they only change it based on the audience.
And you can't do
that. To them, they know the context, and as long as they're practicing the context, then it's okay. And since it is not technically a religion of peace, and they are doing jihad is a holy act, and they are allowed to do that on holy days.
No, I don't buy it. It's a bullshit interpretation that doesn't match what the book actually said.
You are not Islamic, so you cannot interpret it.
No. See, that's the problem. If the message cannot be understood by someone outside the religion, if it is not universal, it doesn't fucking count. You shut your fucking mouth. No. God's message is supposedly for everyone,
what if it's
right?
not intended?
No, God's message
that,
is supposedly
That's your idea of God's
no,
message.
That's,
their idea
that is every Abrahamic religion's interpretation of God. That is every Abrahamic religion's interpretation of God. We are all supposed to follow
Abrahamic
God the highest. That is every Islamic interpretations of God. We are all supposed to be loyal devotees of God. His message is universal. So if you tell me that you know the word of God better than I do and that only you can interpret it properly, then your message is inherently against the word of God, because if I can't interpret it, then God is not for me. It's for you. And that's not what you're saying God is about. Supposedly, God is for everybody. Any way you look at it, they're full of shit.
That cannot possibly be a true statement based on the fact that there are more than one version of Islam.
Any way you look at it, they're full of shit. That's what I'm saying.
All of them are full of shit.
Because God's message is supposed to be universal.
Mike,
I think we're getting off the bike, really far off the beaten path here. We're watching a debate.
We need to get back if we're ever going to finish. But
let's get back to the debate.
But with this, you are interpreting Islam from your position within Christianity.
I'm not looking at it from the Christian perspective, because if I was looking at it from the Christian perspective, I would say that they're heretics, because after the coming of Christ, the Lord said there should be no more prophets, so Muhammad was a heretic. That's not the interpretation I'm coming from. I'm coming from the simple interpretation of if Allah's message is universal and everyone should be Islamic, then you cannot say that you know the word of God better than I do when you read the book. It doesn't work that way.
Well, we'll hit this another time, because it's always a fun topic and we can always rattle on about it for like an hour. So right now we'll get back to what Ted Cruz is saying. God, I hate saying that, though. Let's get back to what Ted Cruz is saying.
I'd rather
rant about Islam.
Okay. Let me pull on my fingernails, too, while we're at it.
I know. Yeah. Okay, here we go.
To destroy ISIS, he said, there is no military solution. We need to change the conditions on the ground so that young men are not in poverty and susceptible to radicalization. That, with all due respect, is nonsense.
It's the same answer the State Department gave, that we need to give them jobs. What we need is a commander-in-chief who makes clear, if you join ISIS, if you wage jihad on America, then you are signing your death warrant.
You don't see it as an ideological problem? An ideological problem in addition to a military one.
Megan, of course it's an ideological problem. That's one of the reasons why I introduced the Expatriate Terrorist Act in the Senate that said if any American travels to the Middle East and joins ISIS, that he or she forfeits their citizenship so they don't use a passport to come back and wage jihad on Americans. Yes, it is ideological. And let me contrast President Obama, who at the prayer breakfast essentially
did hand motions.
He said, well, gosh, the Crusades, the Inquisitions, we need a president that shows the courage that Egypt's president al-Sisi did, a Muslim, when he called out the radical Islamic terrorists who are threatening the world.
Governor Bush. For days on end in this campaign, you struggled to answer a question about whether knowing what we know now,
you
would have invaded Iraq. I remember it too. And ISIS, of course, is now thriving there. You finally said no to the families of those who died in that war, who say they liberated a country and deposed a ruthless dictator. How do you look at them now and say your brother's war was a mistake?
Knowing what we know now, with faulty intelligence and not having security be the first priority when we invaded, it was a mistake. I wouldn't have gone in. However, for the people that did lose their lives and the families that suffered because of it, I know this full well because as governor of the state of Florida, I called every one of them. Every one of them that I could find to tell them that I was praying for them, that I cared about them, and it was really hard to do. And every one of them said that their child did not die in vain, or their wife or husband did not die in vain. And so why it was difficult for me to do it was based on that. Here's the lesson that we should take from this, which relates to this whole subject. Barack Obama became president, and he abandoned Iraq. He left, and when he left, Al-Qaeda was done for. ISIS was created because of the void that we left. And that void now exists as a caliphate the size of Indiana. To honor the people that died, we need to stop the Iran agreement for sure, because the Iranian mullahs have their blood on their hands, and we need to take out ISIS with every tool at our disposal.
Governor Walker, February you said that we needed to gain partners in the Arab world. Which Arab country, not already in the U.S.-led coalition, has the potential to be our greatest partner?
What about additional ones? We need to focus on the ones we have. You look at Egypt, probably the best relationship we've had in Israel, at least in my lifetime, incredibly important. You look at the Saudis. In fact, earlier this year, I met with Saudi leaders and leaders from the United Arab Emirates, and I asked them, what's the greatest challenge in the world today? Set aside the Iran deal. And they said it's the disengagement of America. We are leading from behind under the Obama-Clinton doctrine. America's a great country. We need to stand up and start leading again. We'd have allies not just in Israel, but throughout the Persian Gulf.
That is not what the Middle East means by the disengagement of America. They mean they want us to get the fuck out of their land.
To disengage.
Yeah.
In fighting terror. As president, would you bring back waterboarding?
Well, yeah. I wasn't sure I was going to get to talk again.
We have a lot for you.
Meh. I'm not getting called in on enough.
All right. You know, what
you little shit.
Do in order to get the information that we need is our business. And I wouldn't necessarily be broadcasting to everybody what we're going to do. You know, we've gotten into this mindset of fighting politically correct wars. There is no such thing as a politically correct war. And
so what you're saying is we should stoop to their level?
Doesn't believe in the Geneva Convention. Carson doesn't believe in fighting stupid wars. And what we have to remember is we want to utilize the tremendous intellect that we have in the military to win wars. And I've talked to a lot of the generals, a lot of our advanced people, and believe me, if we gave them the mission, which is what the commander-in-chief does, they would be able to carry it out. And if we don't tie their hands behind their back, they will do it extremely effectively.
Gentlemen, the next series of questions deals with Obamacare and the role of the federal government. Mr. Trump, Obamacare is one of the things you call a disaster.
Complete disaster, yes.
Saying it
here we go.
Replaced.
Correct.
Now, 15 years ago, you called yourself a liberal on health care. You were for a single-payer system, a Canadian-style system. Why were you for that then, and why aren't you for it now?
First of all, I'd like to just go back to one. In July of 2004, I came out strongly against the war with Iraq because it was going to destabilize the Middle East. And I'm the only one on the stage that knew that and had the vision to say it. And that's exactly what happened.
But
the Middle East became totally destabilized. So I just want to say, as far as a single payer, it works in Canada. It works incredibly well in Scotland. It could have worked in a different age, which is the age you're talking about here. What I'd like to see is a private system without the artificial lines around every state. I have a big company with thousands and thousands of employees, and if I'm negotiating in New York or New Jersey, California, I have one bidder. Nobody can bid. You know why? Because the insurance companies are making a fortune because they have control of the politicians, of course, with the exception of the politicians of the stage. But they have total control of the politicians. Rid of the artificial lines, and you will have yourself great plans. And then we have to take care of the people that can't take care of themselves, and I will do that through a different system.
Hey, Mr. Trump, hold on one second.
Newsflash.
I know, hold on, Senator
Paul. Newsflash, the Republican Party's been fighting against a single-payer system for a decade. So I think you're on the wrong side of this if you're still arguing for a single-payer
system. I'm not, I don't think you heard me. You're having a hard time tonight.
All right, Mr. Trump, it's not just your past support for single-payer health care. You've also supported a host of other liberal policies. You've also donated to several Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton included, Nancy Pelosi. You explained away those donations, saying you did that to get business-related favors. And you said recently, quote, when you give... the hell you want them to do.
You better believe it.
So what specifically did they do?
If I ask them, if I need them, you know, most of the people on this stage I've given to, just so you understand, a lot of money.
Not me.
Not me.
But you're welcome to give me a check, Donald.
Many of them.
Actually, to be clear,
that's right.
Not Charlie Crist.
Not mine.
Hey, Charlie,
but I have...
Donald, I have campaign, I hope you will give to me.
Good.
Okay.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me, Governor. I will tell you that our system is broken. I give to many people. Before this, before 2 months ago, I was a businessman. I give to everybody. When they call, I give. And you know what? When I need something from them, 2 years later, 3 years later, I call them. They are there for me.
So what'd
and you that's
get?
A broken system.
So what'd you get from Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi?
Well, I'll tell you what. With Hillary Clinton, I said, be at my wedding, and she came to my wedding. You know why? She had no choice because I gave to a foundation that, frankly... is supposed to do good. I didn't know her money would be used for jets going all over the world. It was. But
President Trump, thank you. Hold on. We're gonna move on. We'll come back to you, Governor Walker.
Just 1 second on this, though. We spend a lot of time talking about Hillary Clinton and pitting us back and forth. Let's be clear. We should be talking about Hillary Clinton on that last subject, because everywhere in the world that Hillary Clinton touched is more messed up today than before she and the
president. We have many questions to come.
Okay. I gotta stop for just a second there. Because so far, Donald Trump is, of course, massively entertaining. But also, when the bell rings, he stops.
He's the only one.
He I need to stop, right? He put his hands up. He's like, I gotta stop, right? Okay. I'm ready. No problem. Yeah. He follows the rules of the game show.
And he's the only one that does it.
Only one that's doing it.
Never would have called that a million years.
That's amazing.
that's an interesting note.
God.
Yeah.
I can't even. It's every time he talks, like I want to say something to make fun of him, but I can't because he's just such a caricature of himself.
Yeah. He is completely unapologetic for everything that he has said and done, and he has a valid. In his mind, reason for everything that he's done, and he can explain it all away, and he sleeps with the cleanest, clearest conscience I think of anybody on that stage.
If there is anything that I can say that I respect him for, and there's very little. But if there is anything I could say that I respect him for, is that he is going to say exactly what is on his mind, and he doesn't give a shit what you think.
He really doesn't give a shit. It's a superpower. It really is.
I can respect that, not yeah. caring.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I think I
was a big fan of Ross.
How many times has he... How many times has he, you know, filed for bankruptcy, and he still has his fortune?
Oh, my God.
How many times has he been divorced, and he still has his fortune? This is a man who knows that he's going to make it through the storm.
No,
well,
it's
the thing about his fortune.
It's estimated, actually, by independents who look into it, who try to evaluate his finances, because he's very tight-lipped about his finances, and because of the way... And because of the way tax reporting works on a lot of things like property, there's no independent regulation. So he just writes in whatever he wants, and nobody double checks him. So he says he's worth billions of dollars, but you know, people like actual business people, like the people at Forbes, have looked into him and said he's only worth you know a couple hundred million or something like that.
Well, it depends on liquid assets versus
It's a big fucking smokescreen. Everyone who is an actual economist who looks at him says he's worth way more than he claims.
Anyone that's a millionaire / billionaire / whatever rich person knows how to hustle their money. You know, just because he may only have liquid assets of that, you know, he could still wrestle the money out of somewhere. You know, he could probably find it.
And yet he still keeps consistently sending businesses to bankruptcy.
I don't have a problem with him going bankrupt because bankruptcy is a tactic on how to restabilize a business. It has nothing to do with anything other than just the finances of that business.
And yet when a private citizen does it, we're fucked for life.
Yes.
Which is not fucking fair.
Well, businesses can do these things. I mean, because they're people. But if businesses are people,
then they should be screwed when they file for bankruptcy, just like I would be if I did.
Well, they should also be sent to the electric.
It should affect the credit rating of the people running the business.
Well, yeah, but that's not how the business law works, and the business law has been written by people that have been bought by people that buy people like Scott Walker. I mean, that's just how it goes. Now, round and round and round. I mean, as he was saying, I've donated to all these jokers up here on the stage. You know, I mean, he knows exactly how corrupt the system is, and he can explain how corrupt it is because he's done it.
Yeah, there is that.
And he just did it. He just went through and said exactly what he's done. And, you know, it's beautiful. It is such a departure from normal politics that it is genuinely refreshing.
He's really pulls.
Maybe. It is a refreshing thing. I mean, you know where you stand with him because he's just going to say what's on his mind. Yeah, I guess you don't know where you stand with him because he goes random on things. But at least
you know where you stand with
him. Yeah.
You stand on the side of sanity and he's just batshit crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess...
I disagree 100%. I don't think he's a single bit crazy. I think he's just been in this game on the other... He's been on the other side, the dark side of power, if you will, for so long and knows the game so well that he's just totally comfortable at this point with...
He's been the one pulling the strings as opposed to the one having their strings pulled.
Yes,
he's made stuff move.
But if you act like the one pulling the strings openly on the side of the one who gets their strings pulled, you're not playing the game.
No,
he's not. You can't get elected if you don't play the game.
He's playing a different game.
He's playing a game of his own invention, and I'm not sure what the rules are.
Making it up as he goes along.
I don't think anybody's sure what the rules are. Everybody else that's on the dark side of power are going to, at some point, collaborate against him because he cannot be allowed to continue spewing this message of this is how it
this is how the game's really played. I give these guys money, and they do things for me 2, 3, 4 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is exactly what he just said, and then somebody actually asked him, like what, and then he told them.
Yep.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, okay, well, here you go. That's the only answer that he's actually given, the only answer that's really been given on the stage, and it's ridiculous. But as far as...
That's the only answer we've gotten in almost 2 hours.
Yeah, that's the most honest thing that has been said all day, and it's basically, I abused my power.
Because it's legal.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even
that he abused it at this point. This is just par for the course as far as he's concerned. This is the world in which he lives. It's normal. This is what the people in his position with his wealth do. Yeah, it's literally just
Tuesday or something. You know, that's just what happened.
Yeah, this is Tuesday.
Yeah.
And Tuesday, I gave $150,000 to this campaign, and 2 years later, I called it in and said, hey, I want you at my wedding. And they had no choice. They had to be there because that's how power works.
Because they were beholden to me, and if they ever wanted any more money, they knew that they were going to have to jump. That's how it works. What, you didn't know? I mean, it's just matter of fact. This is how it works. What, you didn't know? That's your problem. You didn't have money to do that? That's fucking your problem. I got Citizens United on my backside. I can do this all day long. Now, as far as his bankruptcies are concerned, that's just a way that businesses reorganize themselves. I don't really care about that. Certain market forces. I mean, he's in real estate. Real estate is volatile. We did go through a huge bubble and it burst and all those things. So, whatever. Now, the thing about his fortune, though, he inherited it all. He actually hasn't netted. Oh, yeah. He hasn't gained any money past that. He has at least maintained it and had a weird, crazy existence in the process. So I got to respect that. You know, as crazy and weird as he is, I do respect him for the amount that he has accomplished, even if he hasn't really made a lot of gains, and even if he does talk a big story. Man, there is something about the Donald. There really is. As much as I make fun of his hair, as much as the world makes fun of his hair and his attitude and everything that he does, he is a caricature, and he's a strangely lovable caricature of everything that we'd imagine a wild billionaire would be.
He is a marketing genius.
I wouldn't say that he is a lovable character in any way, shape, or form. He's a massive douchebag. But he is definitely the truest representation of what, incredibly powerful businessmen do. And that is act like a giant asshole all the time.
Because he can. And who's
because
gonna
he can.
Who's going to tell him to stop?
And that's exactly the point, is that we can't pretend it doesn't happen anymore, because Trump has made it quite clear that, yes, this is how we actually act. We don't give a crap. We're just dicks all the time. And now that that's out in the open, we don't have any excuse to let it happen anymore.
Yeah. Let's see what Scott Walker was saying. Let's get back to it now.
Questions to come. Governor Huckabee on Facebook. John Pitrione asked this: will you abolish or take away the powers and cut the size of the EPA, the IRS, the Department of Education? Now, broadly, the size of government is a big concern for Facebook users, Facebook persons, as well as obviously conservatives. But year after year, decade after decade, there are
including the ones on the internet.
Government, but year after year, decade after decade, it doesn't happen. In fact, it gets bigger, even under Republican politicians. So the question is, at this point, is the government simply too big for any one person, even a Republican, to shrink?
It's not too big to shrink, but the problem is we have a Wall Street to Washington axis of power that has controlled the political climate. The donor class feeds the political class, who does the dance that the donor class wants. And the result is federal government keeps getting bigger. Every person on this stage who has been a governor will tell you that the biggest fight they had was not the other party, wasn't even the legislature. It was the federal government, who continually put mandates on the states that we had to suck up and pay for. And the fact is, there are a lot of things happening at the federal level that are absolutely beyond the jurisdiction of the Constitution.
This is power that should be shifted back to the states. Whether it's the EPA, there is no role at the federal level for the Department of Education. And I'm still one who says that we can get rid of the Internal Revenue Service if we would pass the fare tax, which is a tax on consumption, rather than a tax on people's income, and move power back where the founders believed it should have been all along.
Dr. Carson, do you agree?
This is a first for...
Is that...
What was that?
This is a first for the debate. I actually agree with something that that one of these candidates has said. Like, I actually legitimately agree that we should do away with taxing people's income and tax consumption instead. That is the only bullet point out of any of these talking points that I've actually legitimately agreed with.
I agree with that, and then on the other hand, I completely disagree that the federal government has no business being in education.
Oh, absolutely. Everything else is total crap.
Yeah.
I absolutely disagree with the sentiment that taxation should be based upon consumption rather than income. And I view taxation as a tool of social management, wherein not just social management, but it is vitally crucial to the management of the distribution of wealth in the country. If you base it off of consumption, well, who consumes? You know, a millionaire and a billionaire cannot conceivably consume enough to...
That's true. Yeah.
To move the money back. They can accumulate money forever.
When you start taxing consumption, you also have to tax things like investments. Because you're buying something. You're buying an investment. And that is the thing that all these rich people do to get tax loopholes from income tax, is they have all these investments everywhere.
Yeah, but technically an investment is not consumption.
It is consumption. You are buying something.
Technically not consumption.
Because buying share.
But
what happens after you've made that initial investment, you paid your 20%, and then you start getting your dividends back? All of that money is income, which is not a consumption, so it's just purely tax-free.
As soon as you get those dividends back, those dividends are not tax-free. Returns on investments are not tax-free, so they go back and invest
they
them
would
again
be under
to make them tax-free.
Well, then you're talking
tax. They would be under tax. If it was based
but
upon income.
If you flip the system around.
But that's income.
If you flip the system around, they're going to be taxed on their investments, which right now they constantly invest in shit to prevent being taxed on their income.
Well, it's a way
you
investment.
You can't use the current system to justify the other system, because the rules that exist now would not be the same rules implemented under
the other system. The other thing that you have to look at is that countries with successful economies have higher sales taxes. They have higher consumption taxes than they do income taxes. That's
a
fact.
But that's for people. That's not for companies typically. You know, mm-hmm.
they're still more successful.
But they also still have like a 40% tax on income.
I'm not saying do away with income tax entirely. I am saying that we should put the burden more on consumption, because income taxes are always going to be unfair to the lower brackets. Poor people are always going to be shafted by income taxes.
But it depends.
And
on
that's a fucking problem.
It depends on the way that the taxation is actually implemented.
The way that taxation is currently implemented, yes, it shafts the people at the bottom. But people below, if you are at the poverty line, you shouldn't even be paying any taxes.
The only way that income taxes is going to be fair is if we go back to the New Deal era income taxes, where anything over a certain bracket was like 99% tax, and anything under a certain bracket was zero income taxes. That's the only way that income tax is ever going to be fair, is if some people pay almost all of it and some people pay zero. That's the
only
way.
Well, no, it's not that people – Here's the thing with the 90%, 95% tax bracket was that it was an effective cap. People said, okay, I'm making this much money. If I make more money than this, I'm shooting myself in the foot. There's absolutely no point. So the excess money that's in the corporation might as well go back into the employees.
It has to be invested.
And wages went up along with it. It was reinvested into the company rather than
No. Wages went up because the federal government said you have to raise wages. That is the only reason wages went up. Wages would have remained at pennies on the dollar
if the
New Deal hadn't said raise the fucking minimum wage.
Well, that's why the tide rose all ships. You know, that's what did that. There were always going to be people that made more than the minimum because they had a different position than the bottom of the barrel. But when the bottom of the barrel
is just
going to
be for your unskilled labor.
Yeah. So
the minimum tax would be unskilled labor. It's going to be for your janitors. It's going to be for your I put the screw in the hole and press the button on the machine and it screws it the whole screw into the hole.
Right. Now, as far as
and those people deserve to make a legitimate living.
Yeah.
But what happens when you raise that to, let's say, you know, people are talking about how $15 an hour, I make $15 an hour and I'm an electronics technician or I'm an IT professional or, you know, all of these various things that require, some of them require degrees, others require, you know, years of training, schooling, a lifetime of knowledge that we've built up, you know, tinkering with computers or tinkering with automobiles or what have you for a very long time to develop these skills. The unskilled labor being at this level means that people can demand more for these skilled trades. So the rising tide lifts all ships also affects everybody who's above that level.
Well, yeah, but they're not the ones that I'm worried about because that will always be true and they will always do well. Skills will always be better than non-skilled. But if you are working at all, you should be able to live off your wage. Off of, you know, a 40-hour work week.
I will argue the semantics of the people with skills will do better. They won't always do well because of the base fact that just because you're making $15 an hour today, 10 years from now, if you're still making $15 an hour, you're at a net loss.
Well, that's why we need to keep raising the minimum wage to keep up with the inflation because, like you said, $15 an hour today is not going to be worth anything in 10 years.
Right, but the other way to do it is to simply cap the wages, and then you can control how much money is actually in circulation.
If you don't have to continue printing more money
so that the rich can continuously get richer while everybody else is trying to get...
It's not going to work.
What's that?
You can't cap wages.
It did work.
Because, no, it did
it
not work.
It absolutely did. That's what the whole point of the 95% tax rate was.
No, it did not work. You did not cap wages, okay? You capped income. There is a difference. You cannot cap wages. You cannot say that, you know, you can never make more than this amount because that implies that we have absolute control over how much money is in circulation, and that's never going to be true because banks, which are private entities, businesses, banks are businesses, they literally create money. If you've taken your economics courses and you've studied how banks work, they literally create money out of nowhere. And then the Treasury has to print more dollars to keep up with that. Unless you have absolute control over currency creation, you can never cap wages.
One of the fights early on in the country that Adams wanted a strong central bank rather than a privatized banking system. We could have had absolute control over our money.
Yes, and
we could have had a very stable economy that would be continuing to thrive with
technically
it wouldn't swing so much.
Technically, private banks do not create money out of whole cloth. They do not do that. That is the Federal Reserve. They determine the absolute number of dollars that are in circulation, plus or minus a variable that may be in the mattress somewhere.
But there is more money in circulation than there are printed dollars.
Because there are stacks of dollars that are in the reserve banks.
There is still more money in circulation than there is, you know, physical currency in reserve. That's how crashes happen.
Well, but that's also when they constrain new bills being put out.
They simply
see, that's, print that's more how money. Crashes happen, because the economy, the pressure of the economy is creating more money.
And no. The economy,
yes, it is. That's how banks work.
Cannot create it, because it is constrained by the Federal Reserve with how much liquidity is actually in the system.
If that was true, then we wouldn't have had the Great Depression, and we wouldn't have had the crash like 10 years ago. Because those kinds of crashes happen because there is more virtual wealth than there is physical wealth to back it up.
No, the crash that happened was because of an economic crisis with the stock market. It didn't have anything to do with the amount of liquidity involved in the economy. It wasn't number of dollars available.
It had more to do with the estimated value of homes versus what they were actually worth. They inflated the values of physical items.
Yeah, and this is all boiling down to semantics, because when you talk about currency, you're talking about something with virtual value. It's fiat money. It has value because we say it does. It's not because we're not on the gold standard anymore. We got rid of all that. So it's the same problem you're having, because the economy thinks it's worth more than it is.
Right, but the actual numbers of dollars that are in circulation is controlled.
Yes, but if the economy thinks the dollar is worth more than it is, then you're going to see a crash. So it doesn't matter how many dollars are in circulation.
But that's inflation, not how much is actually in circulation.
And it boils down to the same thing.
But they work together.
It boils down to the same thing. If you have X amount of dollars and you think it can buy X amount and it doesn't, then the economy crashes.
Well, that's also – well, no, that's a gross oversimplification.
Yes, it is, because economic theory is incredibly complicated, but it is true.
And we need to get back to the debates. Yeah.
I'm just going to say, you know, economics is a giant circular thing.
It's a giant clusterfuck.
it is a giant circular clusterfuck, but
– We can talk about economic to the theory another show. We'll have a more show. Okay, here we go.
We need a significantly changed taxation system. And the one that I've advocated is based on tithing, because I think God's a pretty fair guy. And he said, you know, if you give me a tithe, it doesn't matter how much you made. If you had a bumper crop, you don't owe me triple tithes. And you'd have no crops at all, you don't owe me no tithes. So there must be something inherently fair about that. And that's why I've advocated a proportional tax system. You make $10 billion, you pay $1 billion, you make $10, you pay $1. And everybody gets treated the same way. And you get rid of the deductions, you get rid of all the loopholes. And
Brad. Governor Bush.
And I have a lot more to say about it.
We're going to come back to you, Dr. Carson. Governor Bush, you are one of the few people on this stage who advocates for Common Core education standards, reading and math. A lot of people on this stage vigorously oppose federal involvement in education. They say it should all be handled locally. President Obama's Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, has said that most of the criticism of Common Core is due to a, quote, fringe group of critics. Do you think that's accurate?
No, I don't. And I don't believe the federal government should be involved in the creation of standards directly or indirectly, the creation of curriculum or content. That is clearly a state responsibility. I'm for higher standards.
Namely Texas.
So basically what they're saying is that everybody in every state should be educated differently. So there's no commonalities at all.
Promotion, and I know how to do this, because as governor of the state of Florida, I created the first statewide voucher program in the country. The second.
Oh, wait a second. He's talking about vouchers?
Yep.
Oh, he wants to privatize all the schools. Okay, fine. Well, now we know. Moving on.
And statewide voucher program in the country, and the third statewide voucher program in the country. And we had rising student achievement across the board, because high standards, robust accountability, ending social promotion in third grade, real school choice across the board, challenging the teachers union and beating them is the way to go. And Florida's low-income kids had the greatest gains inside the country. Our graduation rate improved by 50%.
Yeah, they had the best gains because you lowered all the standards. You made it easier to pass.
And pretty much every teacher in the state hates you.
Yeah, everybody in the business who actually knows what they're talking about fucking hates you.
Yeah. Senator Rubio, why is Governor Bush wrong on Common Core?
Well, first of all,
I too believe in curriculum reform. It's critically important in the 21st century. We do need curriculum reform, and it should happen at the state and local level. That is where educational policy belongs, because if a parent is unhappy with what their child is being taught in school, they can go to that local school board or their state legislature or their governor and get it changed. Here's the problem with Common Core. The Department of Education, like every will never be satisfied. They will not stop with it being a suggestion. They will turn it into a mandate. In fact, what they will begin to say to local communities, you will not get federal money unless you do things the way we want you to do it. And they will use Common Core or any other requirements that exist nationally to force it down the throats of our people and our
Well, you know, every country that is doing better than us in education has a national standard.
And I think the states ought to create these standards. And if states want to opt out of Common Core, fine. Just make sure your standards are high. Because today in America, a third of our kids, after we spend more per student than any country in the world other than a couple of rounding errors, to be honest with you.
That's a lie.
Or college.
Here's the thing. Okay, all the states should do whatever the hell they want, as long as it's a standard, because obviously, now I'm going to explain why we ought to do it at a national level.
Yeah. because if everyone has a different interpretation of high standards, how can you say everyone's meeting high standards? And the idea that we spend more per child on education is a fucking lie.
It's ridiculous.
Just straight up not true. I mean, Japan is the obvious example of a country that spends way more than we do on education and gets results. Our education system is absolute garbage because people like these people keep gutting it.
Yeah. Okay.
And or career ready. We are going to compete in this world we're in today. There's no possible way we can do it with lowering expectations and dumbing down everything. Children are going to suffer and families' hearts are going to be broken that their kids won't be able to get a job in the 21st century.
We have many more questions coming on a host of topics here from Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland. Stay with us.
And that is the end of this round, I believe. Yes.
Whew. Why did I put the alcohol away?
So that you
can remind me why I put the alcohol away?
Because so you don't want to die.
Yeah, it was death. So that's the thing.
I
was surprised.
You know,
I didn't have that many, but I really.
Why did you guys talk me out of it?
I talked you out of it because I don't want you to die. But you know what? Now it's hour three. You can start drinking again.
That's right. Yes. Because then you can just go to bed.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's that's a thing. Definitely a thing. Okay. And with that, let's quickly wrap up this segment. Woo. And I actually fixed things. So there we go.
Wrap this up. I'll be right back.
Okay, so that is the end of show 71, which is a continuation of show 70, immediately to be followed up by show 73. And, well, that's it for that one. And in the meantime, conversations are probably still happening on the web. Head over to orellyradio.com. That's O-R-L-Y-R-A-D-I-O for all the links at the top of the page. And do watch us live, like we have actually still at this hour. We had two live viewers. Amazing. Crazy. Amazing. And we even have somebody in the IRC. Hello, Nico. Thank you for joining us this evening. If you've liked what we've done here tonight, amazing if you have. I'm not even sure I like what we've done here tonight. But you can go over to patreon.com, patreon.com/cowencowen. That would be me. And contribute financially to your heart's content. If that's too rich for you, I completely understand. Please contribute to the show with topic ideas, corrections, advertising offers, unclaimed lottery tickets, hate mail, and unsolicited advice by emailing them to us at ohreallyradiopodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, leave us a voicemail. 470-222-ORLY-6759. Or, hey, you got a subreddit too out there. Go ahead and post stories. We'll vote them up and down and do whatever you need to with that. And, of course, we got the Facebook. We got the Twitters. We got the Tumblrs. We got the Google Pluses. And we got the YouTubes, obviously. So, hey, go subscribe to all of those. All of them. And then you'll never miss us. And, hey, please leave us that 5-star review wherever you found us. And we can't thank you enough for spending some time with us this evening. An awful lot of time by the looks of it. And we'll see you next time in probably about 7 minutes if you're still watching. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.